It's time for our weekly look at Congress with USA Today Politics and Congress Editor Paul Singer. The president has canceled political travel today to meet with his cabinet to discuss the country's response to Ebola. This morning, news of a second infection of a Dallas nurse was announced.
And as we stand 3 weeks away from midterm elections, a lot of attention has been focused on a possible Republican takeover of the Senate. But what's happening in the House? A political report suggests Republicans could establish their tightest hold there since Truman's presidency.
Paul Singer joins us every week at this time. Paul, thanks for being with us again.
My pleasure. How you doing, Rob?
I'm real good. Well, let's start with Ebola. What role does Congress play potentially in responding to a threat like this?
Well, you'll remember that about a month ago, Congress passed a supplemental spending bill that included $88 million for the administration's response on Ebola. And then a couple of weeks later, they approved a Defense Department, we call it a reprogramming. Basically, the Defense Department wanted to move some money out of one set of accounts into another set of accounts. That was another $750 million. At this point, you know, the White House says they are in the process of allocating $1 billion to Ebola response. So far, they've only allocated about $311 million of that, but that's kind of, you know, it takes a while to get rid of $1 billion. So at the moment, honestly, there's not a lot Congress needs to do, or for that matter can do. They're not even here. I think the next turn of the screw becomes the current funding bill that expires December 11th. We will need a new funding bill to keep the government open for the rest of the year, that is, for the rest of the fiscal year. I think there's no doubt there will be talk about increasing allocations for Ebola and for probably for CDC to develop vaccines and stuff like that in that bill. But that won't be until early December.
Now, there's no shortage of world crises these days. So with so much competing bad news, how has the conversation in Congress on Ebola evolved over the last several months?
Well, you know, it's funny that we were just talking about the other day, whatever happened to NSA spying? You remember when that was a big deal? And we went and did some calling around, and it registers nowhere in the polls. It registers nowhere in campaigns. Now it's all about Ebola, you know, this week. You know, what now happens is a blame game starts where you'll see Democrats accusing Republicans of starving the CDC and other government agencies that would be and that are the primary responders to Ebola. And you see Republicans responding that, in fact, these agencies have not been starved. They've simply been misdirecting their resources that they've been given. And, in fact, they're doing fine in funding. It's just a question of dumb spending of that money. So Congress, in its typical mood at this point, they're not here. They're not working on much, but they are blaming each other for what's not going right.
And the editorial board at USA Today published an opinion piece suggesting that politicians were overreacting, using this for political gain, as you were just kind of outlining. You're separate from the editorial board, but have we seen that much in the nature of alarmism in the response?
Alarmism is there. I mean, you know, honestly, we have this conversation every morning at our morning news meeting, right? Are we being alarmist? You know, are we telling people about an important and scary health situation, or are we flaming or fanning the flames of panic? It's, you know, I honestly have very mixed feelings about both our coverage and everybody else's coverage. You know, we want to be responsible. We want to be telling the story. And I think politicians have the same problem. They want to be telling the story. They want to be informing their constituents. And, to some degree, of course, they're running for office. They want to be making a political point about the philosophical decisions that lawmakers have made and how those either help or hurt us in these situations. But at the same time, you don't want to be telling people, you know, screaming fire in a crowded movie theater.
Now, turning to midterm elections, Republican control of the Senate is being talked about these days as likely. And in Kentucky, the Senate Democrats' national campaign is no longer buying ads for Mitch McConnell's challenger, Alison Lundergan Grimes.
Right, now, but I'll warn you on that. That is true. But she's also got a $5 million war chest of her own. So it's not like she's gone away.
So
but
is
yes,
this not
right.
as significant as it may seem to be that they're giving up on her because it seems likely that she's going to lose, which is one narrative that's out there?
I think she's likely to lose, but it's a pretty close race. One narrative out there is that the Democrats are abandoning her because they think she's going to lose. Another narrative is that the Democrats are shifting their money elsewhere because they have less well-funded challengers that they really want to try and push, or, for that matter, incumbents they want to save. I think winning Kentucky has always been a bit of a pie-in-the-sky chance for them. You don't usually beat the sitting Republican leader, minority leader in the Senate. I think they think they've got a pretty good shot, the best shot they're going to have. And I think they think that spending a lot more money in that race is not as fruitful as spending money where they really need to rescue some endangered incumbents, whether it's in Iowa, in fact, not an incumbent there, but a Democratic seat, or in Louisiana or in Arkansas where there are incumbents. That is my suspicion of the calculus.
There's been a lot of talk about the Senate possibly changing control. Less talk about the House. Everybody pretty much agrees that the Republicans are going to stay in control. At one point, though, Democrats were talking like they might make limited gains there. That seems to be changing. Is it looking likely that Republicans will score, you know, further wins in the House?
Yeah. Democrats were talked about wins in the House. Nobody else was. that was never really likely to happen. The guesses all along have been somewhere between 6 and 10 pickup seats for the House Republicans, which would solidify their majority. I think the question is, do they pick up 20 seats? That would be fairly dramatic. And would, as you think you're mentioning at the top of the show, you know, establish the strongest majority for them in many years. It would also, frankly, be something of a validation of John Boehner's speakership. Remember, you know, at the beginning of the year, people were talking about, oh, John Boehner is weakened by his Tea Party caucus, and the Republicans are going to vote for somebody else for speaker, and, you know, it's proved they can't actually steer this ship well. I mean, if the Republicans win 5 or 6 seats, okay, you know, maybe we still have that argument. If Republicans win 20, suddenly Boehner looks like a champ.
And now let's look at some of the issues in the congressional races. A while back, we were talking a lot about Obamacare as an important talking point in Republican campaigns. Just a few weeks out, are things shaping up that way?
Well, you still see some of it. It's still of interest to people. What's interesting to me is that some of the Democrats have begun defending their votes on Obamacare. They don't call it that, of course. They say stuff like, I'm very proud that I voted to allow you to be covered for pre-existing conditions or to allow your children to stay on your health care plan. Right, they never say, I voted for Obamacare. The name is still toxic. I don't think Republicans are making as much headway as they thought they might on Obamacare. Certainly not, you know, 9 months ago when it looked like this was going to be the issue of the campaign, because they've got a bunch of other things to talk about now, right? They've got government incompetence in general. I think there is a sense that the country is drifting in the wrong direction, that the government has not been functional, and that Democrats and President Obama particularly are to blame. That's been the Republican talking point. I think that Obamacare is part of that. Certainly, and in certain races, it can be a very influential issue. But it has not turned out to be the star of the campaign season that we expected.
Well, has everything just sort of disappeared from the radar, as you were just saying, sort of in the wake of ISIS and Ebola, in terms of possible campaign talking points?
You know, what has really emerged as the campaign talking point, particularly for Republicans, is Obama bad. And it's everything from Ebola to ISIS to, the economic recovery is not good enough to Obamacare. The major themes here have been your Democratic candidate X, insert name here, is too close to Barack Obama, and Barack Obama has been bad. And with Obama's performance rating so low in the public eye, it works. I mean, he was supposed to go on a campaign trip today for the first time all year, basically being on the stage with a Democratic candidate. And, of course, that got canceled so he could stay home and talk about Ebola.
Well, speaking of bad news for President Obama, we speak to former Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta today, latest Obama cabinet member to write a memoir with some criticisms of the president. Is it rare to see this kind of criticism from his almost inner circle while still in office?
Not really. I'm surprised to hear it from Leon Panetta because we've known him in Washington for years, and he's always been a fairly temperate kind of guy. He was a member of Congress. He was Secretary of Defense. He was a CIA. I mean, he's had every position in Washington you can imagine, and you don't expect him to be the guy to sort of to blab and kiss and tell, as it were. But no, there, you know, if you want to leave the administration and make a little bit of money on your book, it helps if you say something sexy and nasty about the president, and it happens all the time. Every administration around this time, you will see former administration official writes books saying, my bosses were morons.
Is this in any way, do you think, a move by Panetta on behalf maybe of Panetta and some others behind him of looking ahead to the next presidential election?
I don't know. I mean, I think mostly it's a move to sell books. Whether it's I don't doubt Mr. Panetta's view, right, that he feels like he was not listened to and bad advice was being pursued by the administration, and they were just trying to get out of Afghanistan and Iraq as quickly as possible. I mean, I don't doubt that. He's not the only one who's ever said that either. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's anything more strategic to it than that you say it. You get paid a lot of money to write books that say it. You then go on the talk show circuit and talk some more about it, and then you move on.
Paul, thanks a lot for being on the talk show circuit with us today.
Yeah, where's my check?
We've been speaking with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. He joins us each week at this time to give us the latest from Congress.